It is terrific to be here at the Wilson Center. I've had the pleasure of being here for the entire year as a visiting scholar instead of just dropping in as I usually do. It's been a chance for me to know even more about the excellent work that the Wilson Center does here in many areas, including Africa. Today's program is called Beyond the Headlines, and you've heard a lot about the headlines already. Population growth in Sahel is extreme, the environment is fragile, security is afflicted by frequent conflicts. If we're going to look beyond that, we want to look for ways to reduce those risks and reduce that fragility. We heard this morning about the importance of resilience, and I'm going to talk a little bit about resilience and conflict. What makes a state resilient with regard to conflict is being legitimate, effective, and inclusive. If people come to trust the state and public institutions, they have less need to work through private networks to get around the state or to protect their group at the expense of others. But it's difficult to build strong, effective states when populations are growing very rapidly, when people lack the education to be empowered members of society. And so the things we've talked about, population growth, education, and security, are all deeply intertwined. And this is the reason that the relationship that Dr. Sankata put up remains very strong throughout the world and throughout history. When you have societies that have effective government, those governments are able to provide education. Fertility declines, that allows a greater investment in young people. As young people grow up feeling more in control of their own destinies, they're more likely to turn to constructive group activities and less likely to be drawn to deviant or extremist movements out of anger or frustration. They're more likely to be engaged in building society and strengthening it. Now, this is a phase that all societies have gone through, but we've seen that Africa, and particularly the Sahel, seem to be lagging in making this demographic, educational, and democratic transition. They're all tied together, and I'm going to talk now in just a few minutes about the magnitude of these issues. So Africa does have a fast-growing population. This makes it potentially the world's greatest resource for the future. As you can see from this graph, in another 10 or 20 years, Africa will become the only part of the world where the labor force is continuing to grow. So in a sense, the future of the entire world economy depends on whether the young people of Africa grow up with the skills to be productive, to find steady jobs, and to move the global economy ahead. Now, there's no simple relationship, I should say, between jobs and violence. You can have a high level of employment, but if people are employed in low-income, dead-end jobs, they may grow quite frustrated. And one of the difficulties with Africa's economy is that so many people are in an informal sector working at precarious or part-time jobs. So that kind of work is not going to lift the region forward. We have a huge young population that's eager for education and work. In fact, it's so large that for Africa as a whole, roughly 1 in 4 children in the world today is growing up in Africa. By mid-century, it'll be about 40%. So the education, the socialization, and the stability of the young people in this region of the world is going to be, the dominant issue for conflicts in the years ahead. Now, we've talked about the need for education, but education needs to be seen as part of a holistic social system. You can't just invest in one part of the system. Same thing with contraception. You can't simply make contraceptives more available. You have to deal with the entire social system that supports a high desired family size, that makes women limited in their empowerment so that they essentially need to please their husbands who want large numbers of children. You can't just essentially poke the beast in one part and expect to really change things. So what's happened in education is that Africa has actually been very successful in primary education. So these numbers here, these are Africa as a whole. You have Ethiopia, Nigeria, Niger from the Sahel represented up here. But these countries actually have not only 100% of the children of primary age school in primary education, they also have many young people and even adults who have passed out of the normal primary school years taking primary education to make up the deficits of lack of education when they were young. So this has been very successful. And one of the reasons it's been so successful is that USAID did influenced by a study showing that the greatest economic return is on primary education, determined to put all of its efforts into making sure that Africa had universal primary education, or as near to it as they could. However, secondary education was kind of left as a later step. Once we've got everybody in primary education, then we'll build secondary. The problem with that is that even though there have been great steps in literacy and primary education, it so far had essentially no effect on fertility in Africa. What we've found in Africa is that urbanization and income growth by themselves have not changed family structure. They haven't changed the desire for large families. They haven't changed the dominance of men in determining family size. What seems to change that is allowing women to stay in school until age 18. If you take women out of school at age 12 and say they've had a primary education, that's excellent. They're still available for marriage at 14, 15, 16. They start marriage early, they have very large families, and they don't change the basic family dynamic. They don't get into that demographic dividend that arises once fertility starts a rapid decline. So these deficits, this difference between secondary education and primary education, has become vast, the largest in the world, very marked. Look at Niger, 71% primary education, but only 16% secondary education. And for women, it's near zero. So this is, I think, the big gap that needs to be addressed. But delivering secondary education is a holistic process. You have to give families enough income that they can keep their children in school. You have to produce secondary school teachers, which requires enough tertiary school investment to produce competent teachers. And you need an administrative structure that can deliver sophisticated textbooks, basic shop and laboratory materials. Secondary education is a substantial investment. But at this point, it's the lack of that investment that's probably the major thing holding Africa back. The other area in which Africa really is separated from the rest of the world is in energy consumption. If you look at a map of the world at night, Africa is still the dark continent. Hackneyed as that phrase is, it does apply to the energy spectrum of the African continent. So in 2008, 0.32 tons of carbon per person, and even that was only because Libya and South Africa are unusually heavy consumers in Africa. China, a little more than 20 times as much carbon output per person. So if Africa were to reach China's level per capita by 2060, the carbon emissions from Africa would be as much as Europe, China, and the US combined. Africa needs to develop, but it needs to develop in a largely carbon-free fashion. Otherwise, it's going to overwhelm all of the gains and benefits made from solar, wind, and other energy conservation in China, Europe, and America. Is there a pathway by which Africa can develop and get the energy it needs to light up the continent without becoming a major consumer of fossil fuels? The potential is there. Africa has huge potential resources for hydro, wind, and solar power, but it will require a very different model of development. And the race is on, because right now Africa is urbanizing. As we've heard today, Africa is urbanizing at an extremely rapid pace. Urban populations want air conditioning, transportation, the construction of large buildings. All of this increases the demand for energy in a hurry. And so Africa right now is facing a choice. How do we build our future? We need development, but if it embarks on a fossil-rich energy path, it is going to overwhelm the progress that's been made. And the reason for that is simply the potential for enormous population growth. Now, education, stability, and family planning can bend the curve in the Sahel. Nigeria is on course right now for a population of 440 million by 2050. And it's not impossible. Nigeria is a large country. It's potentially rich. The difficulty is you don't get that demographic dividend from young people if each generation is 10 or 15% larger than the next. You have to keep ramping up your investment just to keep pace with the number of school children, with the number of houses you need. You don't increase the per capita income or the per capita investment in children until that fertility curve starts to go down. Now, how rapidly can it change? Here's the good news that you don't see in the headlines. It is quite possible, we've seen it, to bend the curve of population growth with investment in secondary school education. My research team has done some projections and estimates modeling the effect of secondary school education for women on rates of fertility. And we did this with Tanzania, not part of the Sahel, admittedly, but a country with quite good demographic and education data available, and was convenient for this modeling exercise. So here's the UN medium scenario for population growth. Today, around 50 million people live in Tanzania. The projection is this will grow almost sixfold by the end of the century if nothing changes. Now, even if secondary enrollment grows a little bit, that will not be sufficient to bend the curve. We really need a massive effort because the population is growing so rapidly. If you increase secondary school education at a lower rate than population growth, you fall behind rather than get ahead. So the trick is to get secondary enrollment up to a substantially higher rate than population growth. If you do that, this is what happens to the projected population growth curve. Now, there's a whole volume this thick from the Vienna Demographic Institute arguing that all of our projections about global population growth are overstated because if we allow for growth of education, we're going to get this instead of that. My response to them is, you are right if we can coordinate the response to educate and empower women, increase the availability of jobs that fit educational qualifications, allow governments to develop that are sufficiently legitimate and effective, that conflict does not undermine the stability of the educational system. Conflict is terribly destructive. We have new studies coming out all the time that show how conflict undermines development. In Syria today, an entire generation is losing its education because of the conflict that has taken over that country. Refugees who go to refugee camps do not get the same educational progress that children do who grow up in their own homes. So conflict is enormously destructive, but this cycle of stopping conflict requires a combination of investments, not only in education and contraception, but also in building governments that are inclusive, effective, and legitimate. And that element, if it's lacking, as it so often is, undermines all of the other efforts as well. Now, you can even get, if you get 100% net secondary enrollment in the near term, you can reduce the population to about a doubling. Now, this green curve represents improvement in fertility at the same rate that Iran experienced. Iran, of course, a Muslim country, but one that had a very effective state family planning program and that experienced a huge investment in women's education after the Islamic Revolution. And if Tanzania could get on the same path as Iran, population would not even double in this century. I think that's probably optimistic, but these two curves here look a lot better than these curves here for building a secure future. So let me stop there with this optimistic message. If one country can do it, as Iran did, as Senegal is doing, as Rwanda is doing, other countries can too. The difficulty, of course, is that every country has its own culture, its own traditions, its own mode of government, and therefore each one needs to develop its own set of programs with community involvement, with a combination of international support, but also grassroots, ground-up engagement in building education, women's rights, and stable governance. But as I say, it has been done, it can be done. The Sahel faces huge problems, to be sure. It is facing massive population growth. It is facing environmental decay. It has a history of violent conflict. But other parts of the world have faced similar problems, and if they're able to build the social institutions and the human capital to acquire resilience, then these problems can be overcome, and I think prosperity can be acquired. Thank you.